Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Debra and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome. I'm Dr. Debra.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
We just had a little mayhem in the studio here with the power outage.
Groundhog Day. It's like we're doing it all over again.
We are, but you didn't know what we said to begin with, right?
Exactly.
You're all just listening now. Anyway, so this weekend, I just want to say that I felt like a beer-drinking football junkie. You know, I was really trying to nurse my back, although there was no beer, but I did have wine.
Exactly. It's the wine belly.
The wine belly.
Yes, exactly.
Thankfully, not too much.
But I'm glad. Seriously, and I said this then, and I'll say it again. I'm glad you were resting because you needed it, you of all people.
I do.
So it's good for you.
I do, but it's painful. I don't know if it's more painful to run around and hurt my back or if it's more painful to
delay around. Exactly.
But anyway, it was okay. It was a good weekend. Nothing crazy on my end. I just worked on Saturday and then just relaxed on Sunday.
Good.
How about you?
I did my meditation spiritual group. So I'm trying to be more mindful. I do it once a month now. It's been really great. So I did that and then went to, we went out with friends to see a jazz band really quickly, but I went home at like 8:30 and went to sleep because I was so exhausted. And then Sunday did a barbecue. So it was a good
that
nice
like
chill
a good
weekend.
Mix. You know, I was just thinking when you said being more mindful. Well, so mindfulness can only work if one is in their mind and not out of their mind. So if somebody's crazy, can they, be mindful?
Yes. It just basically I don't know if you know, but I think there is a lot of confusion. It's like, what is mindfulness? It's really just paying attention to everything you're doing.
But if you know how people say, oh, well, he's out of his mind.
Yes.
If you're out of your mind, how can you
be
mindful?
Exactly. Yeah.
The nuances of our language. But anyway, let's just launch right in because we have a little bit shorter time today. Last week we had this amazing woman, Jennifer Irwin, and she wrote the book, a novel, Address the Color of the Sky, basically about a woman who goes to rehab for sex addiction. I love the way she suggested that she was writing the book and how she did different twists and turns because she wasn't quite getting it right.
Yes.
So she ended up doing it where she had the present to the past and back and forth. So I haven't gotten a chance to read it yet.
I know. I can't wait to read it. It sounds fantastic. And I love what she was saying, how now it's so timely that they have this, you know, female heroine who is, you know, basically in a sex rehab, and she wanted more female characters to sort of have the limelight. So I think it's wonderful.
I know. It's great. I can't wait to read that. That'll be maybe while I'm away in Idlewild.
Oh, yes. You could read that.
Week. Yeah. Yeah. So exciting. All right. Without further ado, let's introduce this week's guest. We have Steve Kasner, the author of the recent book, Careful, A User's Guide to Our Injury-Prone Minds. Steve is a research psychologist who for the past 25 years has worked in the commercial aviation safety industry. Steve is interested in helping the rest of the world achieve the historically low accident rate that flying enjoys today. A bit of a natural worrier, Steve manages to have some fun by flying airplanes and helicopters and riding motorcycles and skateboards. Welcome, Steve.
How are you doing?
We're doing great. How about yourself?
We got through that power outage problem.
Well, do you guys think it's bizarre and coincidental that we're talking about like accidents and then this power outage happens? Like, this is the whole topic of today, sort of, right? Like accidents and different things that happen coincidentally.
It really is. And the key is to know that they're going to happen and have a plan B, be prepared for them. And look, we survived.
Yes.
We're doing just fine.
I love the cover of your book. It's got a banana peel on it. Is that the metaphor for slipping on a banana peel?
That's what they came up with, you know, at the publishing company. I wanted the banana to wink at us, but they went with the more serious banana. A winking banana would have been
that's funny.
Would have been more appropriate to me.
So at your book signings, you could put a little wink on the banana instead of just signing your name.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. I thought maybe a pair of scholarly glasses, reading glasses, and then winking. That would be the right sentiment we're looking for.
It would be amazing the few people because that you have that copy of that. Like, that'll be a collector's item.
Yes, I love it.
Maybe the Maybe the paperback. I'm hopeful.
I love it. So what inspired you to write this book?
Well, after working in aviation for so many years, we sort of eliminated our own jobs. Flying is so safe today that you could not die on an airplane even if you really, really wanted to. It's just so safe. Every airplane, when it takes off, it then lands safely. It's perfect. But then I started looking at what was happening outside of the airplane when we're driving our cars to the store or crossing the street to go somewhere or using tools and ladders and things like that. And I noticed, bizarrely, that after 100 years of steady improvement, somehow things are getting worse. That more people, the number of people being hurt or killed doing these everyday things is going up, not down. Hmm. And that just blew my mind.
And what do you attribute that to?
Well, several things that I talk about in the book. And, you know, the first topic anybody brings up is smartphones.
Yes.
And yes, people are walking around and driving around while looking at their phones, and those numbers are going up. And I think that's part of the problem, that the world's getting a little more complex. We have, you just look around our environment. It's just busier. It's more complicated. There are technological things that don't wear their risks and hazards on their sleeve. You know, I know if a bear comes up to me, that just looks sort of scary. But when I look at a smartphone, you know, it's shiny, it's nice. It doesn't look like something that could really hurt me.
Yeah.
But if you think about it for a while, it can. So I think they're just, maybe the world's changing a little faster than the way we think about staying safe in it is changing. And I think technology and distractions are just one part of it. There's so many other things.
So you think it's more the world.
Which I can go on about.
So you think it's more the world around us versus people just being more accident prone over the years?
No, I don't think we are really doing anything different. So the popular explanation, and this is a thing that's working against me in my business, is that people think that accidents or errors and oversights and slips are the private domain of the dum-dum or the soon to be removed from the gene pool. And that's just not true. We're getting smarter all the time. IQs are rising. I don't know if you know about the Flynn effect, but over the last couple of decades, our measured IQs just seem to be going up and up and up. So how can we be getting smarter and smarter and smarter, but yet, you know, getting hurt more and more and more? Obviously, it's not because we're dumb. It's
right.
Because something else is going on or some other things are going on.
You were mentioning these.
So,
Go ahead.
You look at the other thing that's new in our environment is living longer. You know, when I was a kid, my grandparents died in their 60s, and, you know, that's what you did when you were in your 60s back then. You died. And now you don't die. You keep living for another 20 years.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're really doing much to prepare ourselves for that. So when I talk to a 75-year-old person, they usually say, "This isn't as easy as it looks." And, I'm like, yeah, I get that. And I don't think we're doing enough to, you know, prepare ourselves for that. And we're seeing an unprecedented rise in the number of injuries happening to elderly persons.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we really need to think. And it's subtle stuff, really subtle things. So we see a lot of falls among the elderly. And then, you know, you start to study that. And some very smart person ask a sample of elderly persons to walk across the room, and they got down on the floor and they measured how high their foot was being lifted with each step. And sure enough, they showed as we get older, we lift our feet just a little bit less high than before. And that's contributing to a lot of these stumbles and slips that we see. I'm like, wow, I didn't see that coming.
Right. Yeah.
I didn't know that. On what birthday should I start thinking about that? Well,
wow.
So, you know, but no one knows that. No one takes that into account. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we don't pay so much attention. We don't have night lights. Now that I'm older, I'm in my 50s. I get up and go to the bathroom in the middle of the night several times, and I never used to do that. But, you know, I'm thinking maybe I should have a nightlight so I can see where I'm walking. And maybe I should not leave my junk laying all over the floor like I used to in my 20s. Mm-hmm. These are really good thoughts and might keep us around a bit longer.
I love that. I got to teach my cats not to walk under my feet. I have a tendency to kind of like be looking at something else next to
you. You'd be amazed.
A cat.
Yes.
I look up the cat-related injury statistics while I was working on my book. Uh-huh. And I love cats, and I grew up with cats. And yeah, they're little furry-tailed troublemakers, they are.
That's really funny. Because they're sneaky. They can kind of like get through.
Well, especially when both of them are doing the dance around the feet.
Yeah.
You know, I have two big ones, and they are hysterical because they'll try to fight for my attention. They'll literally just walk right up in front of me and try to trip me. Well, I don't think they're trying to trip me.
Right, but trying to get your attention.
Yes. They're so funny.
Right.
You were talking about cell phones a minute ago, and it made me think that twice this week, if I hadn't been paying attention to the drivers, I would have been killed.
Yes.
No doubt about it. I was walking across this large street.
Okay.
On the light for me, the walk, and somebody was coming around from the other side to make a left turn into the crosswalk where I was walking and literally didn't see me.
Oh.
And if I would have taken one more step, because I realized this guy was not stopping, could not see me, I wasn't paying attention. And then when he actually saw me, you'd think that he would have some look of remorse or stop and go, "Are you okay?" No, he flipped me off.
No.
Yeah.
Was he on the phone? Well, no.
He just wasn't paying attention.
Yeah.
Is that entitlement attitude. I'm going to get through that crosswalk before she gets to it. Maybe he did see me and just figured he could beat me. Mean. It was. Oh.
Yeah.
But thank God, because a lot of times I walk and I'm reading my text messages or my emails.
Well, I want to know, in general, how good is the typical person at judging risk? Because I feel like this segues into everything we're talking about.
Yeah, judging risk is not something we're very good at all. We might have been okay at it maybe 50,000 years ago, but again, this changing world. Just take that that scenario of being almost run over by a car in a crosswalk, that nobody wakes up in the morning, hits the streets, and counts the number of distractions hanging on the sides of buildings or in people's hands and decides, you know, this environment, visually speaking, is about 11% more complicated than it was 3 years ago. And that's not a good thing. You know, nobody pays attention to that kind of detail. But that's just what happened here. That how many things do we have to look at when we're in a car, aside from the phones? We have more billboards plastered on the sides of buildings and people running about. And how do you keep up? And we just don't see that the risks are increasing and increasing. And we're not factoring that into our thinking. And then, of course, we have the other problems of where do we get information about what's dangerous and what's we watch oddball news stories, you know, like man killed by, you know, giant frozen banana or something, you know, like, I'm going to think about that for a week and talk about it. But we don't hear about the everyday things that really rack up the numbers for us. So in short, we're terrible at this.
Wow. Yeah, that makes sense. I can't believe that everybody doesn't crash their car in West Hollywood. It's like they have like animated billboards everywhere.
Oh.
They're like in motion and they're all over the sides of the buildings. It's like, what? How can you drive?
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand it. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So what's the number common accident in, let's say, middle-aged people, not necessarily older people, but let's say, you know, 40s and 50s?
Deborah's age.
Yes.
Well, right now, sad to say, what's getting a lot of attention is the opioid epidemic. So people taking more of that drug than, you know, they should have. That's a big one. But, you know, beyond that, you know, we're looking at cars. Mm-hmm. Cars are always the number one killer. And part of that is because we spend so much time doing it. Walking and riding a bicycle is just about as dangerous, but we don't see the numbers because we spend less time doing it. But being out there on the road,
mm-hmm.
and the other thing people don't realize, that when you're at home using a ladder, say, you pretty much have to kill yourself if you're going to get, you know, that's going to have to happen to you. On the road, you're at the mercy of thousands of other people around you. You don't have to screw up. They can screw up for you. And it's this, people people also don't realize that we have to cooperate. I mean, driving, just getting through an intersection is a huge cooperative effort between all the people out there. But we tend to think of ourselves as individuals, and we're locked inside our steel cages of cars, and we're very, I don't know, not combative, but it's kind of an us versus them kind of thing, mentality. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's kind of an unhealthy situation.
Do you think that self-driving
Here's a bizarre, study, got to throw this one out there. I just read this study that people who were driving convertibles are more pro-social, if you know what I mean, more, you know, forgiving and inviting and welcoming than people who in hardtop cars. Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting? And the theory there is they just feel more part of the community now that they're more exposed to the community without that top on their car.
That makes sense.
Isn't that fun?
That is interesting. But do you think that self-driving cars will actually then make an impact on these statistics?
I do, but, you know, before we have fully automated cars, we're going to have partially automated cars that need us to jump in when things aren't going so well. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be a challenge. Mm-hmm. You know, I think they'll help lower the numbers. The thing I tell people, you know, they worry about the safety of automated cars or partially automated cars. I say, have you looked at the safety of the cars we have now? It's terrible. Yeah. I mean, like 40,000 people a year are dying in these things. I mean, the bar is not set very high for us. So, yeah, I think the technology will make some improvements. And ultimately, in the end, I think it'll make huge improvements.
So, obviously, everybody knows cars are sort of, like most people know that that's kind of very high and dangerous. But what is something that nobody talks about that is really dangerous that would surprise us?
Well, there are a lot of big blind spots. So, of course, using the phone has got to be the most, you know, committed error every day. People just don't realize that, you know, how dangerous that could be. But my favorite one, of course, are fires, home fires. Oh. Nobody talks about fires. Mm-hmm. But each year, the stats show us that one in 300 homes catch on fire to the point where the red trucks need to come to our house.
Wow.
And that's pretty high. And if you look at it across your lifetime, it's something like a 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 chance. So that's a really high risk, but literally no one is talking about fire extinguishers and escape plans and stuff. But here's this crazy thing about risk again. If you look at your chances of being murdered, your chance of being murdered every year, like 1 in 20,000. Whereas your chance of your house catching fire are 1 in 300. You're way more likely to have your house burned down than you are to get murdered. Mm-hmm. But everybody's talking about getting murdered.
Right.
You know, you step outside, you're looking for murderers. You know, you run in the house so the murderers don't get you. Your house might be on fire. Nobody's, it's not rational. It's not tied to the data or the evidence. So that's a really good one.
And then you're like me, who is obsessed with the house burning down, and I ruminate about it all the time. And my house had burnt down. Did you know that, Kelly?
I never knew that.
Yeah, the house I live in now, the owners before, apparently the daughter fell asleep smoking a cigarette, and the house burnt down. So
oh God,
it was rebuilt, which was to my benefit because there was a lot of newer stuff in the house, but pretty crazy, huh?
Well,
think about those statistics. I just said one in four people.
Yeah.
Here we are, three people talking. We had a house burned down already. You don't have to ask too many people.
Oh
before
God,
you get it.
Right.
Do you think that people get more scared about murders than fires, let's say, for example, because they feel like they would be more in control of a fire? It's like, oh, well, I'll be more careful or I'll be able to put it out versus a murder. It's like, oh, my God, I don't have any control over that. Or do you think it's just sensationalized more?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, when I think about it, if I woke up in bed and my house was engulfed in flames, I might have better luck putting out a murderer than I would putting out this fire. I don't know. I'd call it about a coin flip. Of course, in our dream scenario where the fire is very small and it gives us lots of time to get our stuff like our laptop and, you know, various other things that we want to take back, run into the house and rescue a pet and whatnot, which you shouldn't do, of course. I don't know if that's a control thing. I think maybe there are more movies and stories about murders than there are fires. So I think it's in our culture to talk about that more. that, you know, what do we got on the movie set? We got Backdraft. That might be it.
Yes.
First, how many movies about murders? You know, Humphrey Bogart, you know, was in a whole bunch of movies about murders, and so are people today.
Mm. So I like that in your book you broke down, like in the Watching Kids chapter, about some of the different things to watch out for in different age groups. Can you run by some of those for us and our listeners, please?
Sure. You know, the first thing to do there is to congratulate people, is that, you know, while our safety seems to be getting worse every year, we have not seen a corresponding increase in child injuries and fatalities. So we seem to be doing a better job at protecting our kids than we are ourselves. Other than, you know, the bad thing for the kid is when, you know, we go out and kill ourselves in some horrible accident, then we don't come home to the kids. But so there's something to think about. But we are doing a better job. It's getting better, but the number's still too high. I mean, you know, one is too high, but, you know, it's way more than one. And cars are the first place to look. And it's amazing the people who study phone use in cars and aggressive driving and speeding and all that sort of stuff find that having a kid in the back doesn't really moderate one's behavior as much as we think it would. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to text and drive. I have the kid in the back. Oh, no, people will text and drive with the kid in the back. And that's kind of a little bit insane. And it's, you know, contributing to the problem. You know, the other big one are swimming pools. And again, yes, this could be a distraction related thing. We need to pay a little more attention when those kids are in the pool than we are now. It's still a huge category thing. So maybe, you know, we're coming back to this distraction and mindfulness thing again.
Yes. That what maybe I was saying at the beginning. Yeah. Wow. And so what do you think about multitasking? Because I think there's, in our society, there's this sort of pride about, oh yeah, you know, I can multitask and I can do 8 different things. The people are watching TV and they're texting and they're on the internet and they're, you know, doing 10 different things. So I'm curious your thoughts around that.
Oh, that's great. There's a psychiatrist out here that comes to a lot of our distracted driving meetings who doesn't use the word multitasking. He calls it delusional multitasking, which you never say multitasking without saying delusional first, because that's exactly what it is. That, you know, we can't multitask. We switch our attention back and forth. And there's so many blind spots in that that people don't realize, that it just doesn't work as well as we think it does. Like, you know, here's the really funny one that I ask people, okay, you're looking down at your phone and then you look back up at the scene, mm-hmm, the driving scene, which, you know, you were just looking at a few seconds ago. If something important changed, you know, would you notice that? And I go, oh yeah, absolutely. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I have a puzzle for you. And then I get one of those old coloring book puzzles where they have two pictures side by side and then they change some things in the one picture.
Yes.
And then your job is to spot the differences. You know that puzzle I'm talking about?
Yep. Yeah.
And how it takes the average intelligent person about 6 to 8 weeks to find 70% of those differences. Uh-huh. This is an impossible task. We're no good at this. Come on. Where did you ever get the idea that you're any good at this? You're not any good at this. Mm-hmm. But people somehow think they are. And the other weird one I see people are not too aware of, that a lot of people use their phones while waiting at a red light.
Yes.
So you're at the red light, you pull the phone out, you blah, blah, and then you put it down. But the problem there is that there's a bit of a hangover effect, that we can't switch our attention between two things and be totally back instantly. It takes a while to rev up again. And it takes a good while, certainly 10, 15, 20 seconds. Mm. But when the light turns green, those are the precious first seconds where we're in the middle of the intersection, that's where cars are streaming by.
Wow, that's a good point.
So we're still a little bit distracted. We're kind of hung over.
That's interesting.
Like, you know, when you wake up in the morning, yeah, it takes a while.
Yes.
It's a sleep inertia.
Yeah.
We talk about. But yeah, there's like a distraction inertia too. That you know, we imagine ourselves to be just like this video camera that can quickly be swiveled between two situations and be on the job in an instant, and that's just not true. Mm-hmm.
So this is an interesting question that just came to my mind based on what you're talking about, because women often make their claim to fame the ability to multitask. And what you're saying is that that's really not true. So I was really curious, are there any gender differences known in auto accidents between males and females if we are the worst culprits of causing accidents than men?
No. That's a vicious lie and stereotype. Men are twice as likely to get killed or injured in a car than women. Women are far superior drivers by a factor of two.
So,
don't let anybody tell you that's complete. Wow. Can I say the BS word on the show? I won't, but yeah, that's what it is.
F-bombs, whatever you want.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, oh, really? Well, that's bullshit. women are 12. And then there's an aggression, a speeding thing. Men are more likely to seek sensations on the road or vent out their, they're more likely to get in a car drunk. We pay the price. Whenever a car accident victim comes in, sight unseen, I'll pay 2-1 odds that it's a dude. Wow. It's just the way it works. But I think women's comparative safety in cars is not due to multitasking. It's due to, just being a little more rational and relaxed and having a little bit better judgment.
So I want to know, based on all these statistics, have you changed anything? Because I'm sure if I read...
Have I changed?
Yeah, have you changed any of your life habits?
I definitely have, and I've met so many interesting people. At one of my first distracted driving conferences, I met an attorney from Philadelphia, Joel Feldman, and he'd lost his daughter in a distracted driving crash. He was not involved. Mm-hmm. And that just blew my mind. I learned all I could from him. And he has, he gives out these little reminder bracelets, please don't use your phone in the car. I wore that thing for 2 months. And every time I thought about even looking at a notification, I had that wristband on my right hand, my phone hand, and I just, nope, not going to do it. And I broke myself from that habit. I don't use my phone in the car.
That's great.
And so statistics, it's meeting people with interesting stories who inspired me. And I'm a better person. I'll still hurt myself. Absolutely. My next big one's just around the corner, I'm sure. But I'm better. I'm way better.
That's really impressive, actually. I got to work on that, too. I am definitely one of those pull it out when there's a red light or dictate and, then listen back to what Siri just screwed up with my dictation and then redoing it and pressing buttons. And, that is not good. But, boy, it's such a habit. It's so hard because we are so pressed for time these days. We overdo we put too much on our plates, I think. So it's hard to just calm down.
Yeah.
I'm really interested.
Well, habit is the key word there, that they're so hard to break your automated routines. I did the Life Hacker radio show a couple months ago, and my big hack at the end of the show, I said, whenever you're using a knife or a tool, imagine it going farther than you intended and, thinking, what's there? Is it your stomach or your arm? Well, then that's not a good setup. But later that night, I came home, was going to open a bottle of wine, and I had a knife pointed at my thumb. And sure enough, I stabbed myself in the thumb. I just went over this.
Yeah.
I just told a lot of people not to do this. Now I do this. It's a habit. Hard one to break.
And I was always taught by my mom that you peel potatoes toward you, and you peel cucumbers toward you, and you're literally holding it in a way that you're bound to slice off your finger.
Oh, my God, that's crazy.
Isn't that crazy? That's how I observed. And then somebody once said, why are you peeling a potato that way? You're going to hurt yourself. I'm like, I don't know. It's what I watched my mother do.
Yeah.
But, I have a question because, I tend to be a little bit of a worrier. I think that Miss Kelly over here, Therapist Kelly, is as well. And you identify yourself as a bit of a worrier. So how do you help somebody, though, who's already hyper anxious? Getting some of this information could lead somebody to be excessively worried about things. So how do you balance that?
Yeah, I don't think we have a crisis an international or national crisis of people being too careful yet. But, if we ever did manage to get there.
right.
Yeah, that's I think we have a lot of misplaced worry. Just look at the helicopter parenting debate that oh, don't go outside. You could, you know, get hurt out there. And so they sit inside and watch TV and gain weight and grow up and get diabetes or something. Like, no, wrong thing. But I don't know, maybe try to adjust your perception of risk to reality. That, like, people worry about when turbulence hits on a plane.
Yes.
It's like, oh, my God, you're kidding, right? And there's, like, no way you're going to die on this plane. Zero, none, absolutely nil. There's no reason for you to worry about that. But, yeah, so maybe it's check the data, whatever you're doing. You know, check in, like, on do a reality check on what you're worried about. And many of the things are nothing, you know?
That is really funny about the turbulence, because I am that person. Like, I don't know what it is. I don't have like a fear of flying, but when that turbulence hits, I grab the person next to me. It's so embarrassing. And they would be like, I'm so sorry. Like, it's like instinct. It's like, you know, like, and so it's really funny. But now I have your words in my brain. So next time I go on a plane, think of you.
And I always heard that the best thing to do is take a look at the flight attendants. If they're calm, there's nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
If they're starting to freak out, you can freak out.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The one thing I say here is have that seatbelt on at all times, because it can, you know, break out. But once you have that seatbelt on, nothing's going to happen to you.
Right.
The worst thing that could happen to you is some flying passenger might land in your lap. But,
right.
Yeah.
But you
other
just
than
keep
that.
Saying that, Stephen, and planes still are crashing and people are dying. So tell me a little bit more about what you mean.
But when's the last major airline crash? Has it been 10 years? Did we just have 75 million flights take off and land safely? I'm trying to remember the last one. Maybe it was the Buffalo crash in 2009.
But what about like small planes, small aircrafts?
Oh, okay. Now, well, that's a different thing. I fly small planes. Yeah, we have a couple of crashes every day. But, you know, there's so much less control there and less attention paid to safety. Oversight, there's not that much oversight. I mean, you can go get in a small plane and go up and do literally anything you want to do today. And no one's going to stop you. So, you know, naturally we see more. And I'm certain that more careful people are at much less risk than a person who, you know, drinks first or has sex in an airplane while in the back seat or, you know, whatever.
The mile high club.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you're... Which reminds me of the other interesting study, really interesting, Cindy Struckman Johnson. She's a researcher at North Dakota, South Dakota, but she recently did a study about sex while driving and found that this is, something
to look into.
That we need to keep.
That's really funny.
Keep look into, or I don't know about look into. I don't know what the word is we're looking for, but it's apparently an issue worthy of some attention on the safety front.
So how long did it take you Another to write thing. The whole book, by the way?
To write the book?
Yeah.
Oh, this is my first one with a big publishing company. So, you know, I had to write it like three times.
Uh-huh.
So if I actually knew what I was doing, which I might the next time, it would be much shorter. I mean, I spent a lot of time doing research, but the writing is the tough part, you know, being able to make your stories and points in interesting ways. And but I attribute that to me, you know, having no clue. And I had a very great editor, tough editor, who just made me rewrite things over and over until we had something good.
Got it right. Yeah, that's neat.
So, I bet one of these pros could whip out a book in 4 months or something. But
so
not me.
I would love to know, like, what's next for you. Do you want to write another book on this subject or something totally different?
Well, what I'm trying to do now, I'm working on magazine pieces. I've learned so much how people are powerfully resistant to this message, that they just don't want to hear this stuff. They don't want to be told that they need to slow down or put their phones away. They don't need to be told that want to be told that they need to keep a closer eye on their kids. That I'm kind of worried that things are going to get worse. So what I'm really trying to do is go out and do some speaking, give talks, and, you know, make it fun where, you know, we talk about the crazy things we do, but that we need to keep an eye on because they can get the best of us. So, you know, really I'm trying to spread the message because so few people know, I mean, that things are getting a little worse than they used to be, not better. Mm-hmm. And that's weird.
I also think
it's just weird. I mean, okay.
I also think we have such a shame-based culture also, so that people are taught that, you know, if you made a mistake, try to cover it up or hide it and pretend like you didn't. And so I think it's so hard for people to just be humble enough to say, you know what, I screw up every day, all the time, and it's my job to continue to pay attention to those screw-ups and try to get better and not have that put you into a self-esteem crisis.
Right.
It is the funniest thing in the world. I mean, Thomas Aquinas came up with the phrase, "To err is human." You think that would have caught on? Like, to breathe is human. To fall asleep at night is human. To err is human. You know, it's just something we do, and there's no way to make it stop. But like you said, we just have this very uncomfortable relationship with our own errors, and we make up excuses. We blame other people. In the end, we might say something like, "Mistakes were made." How do we not just accept this? And you look at some industries like aviation, a remarkably safe one. There are entire volumes written about pilot error, and pilots gladly accept the fact that they are fallible and make errors, and they have a system to take care of that. And I have this funny example. If you look it up, there was a pilot a few years ago that yelled at an air traffic controller who just pointed out that he turned the wrong way on a taxiway. And you should be told that you turned the wrong way in the taxiway. But the pilot comes back and says, "Hey, listen, I make a mistake every 2 to 3 minutes. I don't like your attitude." I love his attitude. He's so open and accepting about his own fallibility.
Right.
Now we just need to, you know, switch him to decaf and, you know, he'll be fine.
It's so funny when you said to err as human, that really reminds me of a funny story when I was in college a long time ago, and my electric bill was turned off, and mm-hmm. I got the disconnect notice, and I had paid the bill, so I was really upset, and I went to had to go to the electric company and mm-hmm. say, you know, look, I had a canceled check and all this stuff, and right behind the woman it said, "To err as human, but to really screw things up takes a computer."
Really funny.
It had been a computer glitch that didn't register my payment, and it was like, but you know, it was embarrassing
because
I did pay my power bill, but it was really funny. That just stuck in my head.
Yeah,
like,
that's
you
really
know,
funny.
To really screw things up takes
to
a computer.
That's really funny.
That's good. Really good. And the even bigger disaster happens when someone doesn't realize what you just said. When they use a computer, so many people think, "Oh, push this button, it'll be done. Hey, a computer did it; it's fine." Mm-hmm. And we know that. Wow, disasters are a button press away.
Right.
Sometimes.
Right.
Wow. Yeah, we got a lot to learn about this business of being careful. It's going to get harder and harder because it's not just phones anymore. Soon we'll have artificial reality. We'll have wearable. We'll be seeing unicorns dancing across the windshield, and who knows what's coming. Brain-computer interfaces, nanotechnology. It's going to get nuts out there.
I was just thinking of the movie where he was a risk analyst, Ben Stiller. I think that was who was in it, and I can't think of the movie name, but it reminds me of it. He was like, "Don't eat the nuts. Do you know how many people touch the nuts in bars?" Like, you know,
I remember that movie.
Yes, and I can't remember the name of it, but it was like a risk. He was like a risk analysis guy. It was really funny. But yeah.
I know that movie. Yeah.
You can remember it.
Well, we could probably all be a little more like him without going all the way and being like him.
Exactly.
Maybe take a few steps toward him.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So what's the biggest risk you think you take, Kelly?
I am horrible with my cell phone in the car also. Like, same thing. Like at red lights, and it's horrible. And so now I'm really going to, I'm going to say it on air so I can hold myself accountable that I really don't want to do that anymore because it is really scary. So that's probably the biggest risk I'm taking currently.
The biggest test of time then is when you get in the car and you text me.
No, I'm not texting you. No, I'm not texting you. You won't be hearing from me. What about you?
That's a good one. I would say currently in my life, that probably is the biggest risk that I take. I can think back, though. I mean, I was nuts when I was younger. You know, totally nuts. Like, I was jumping off, like, the third deck onto the roped-in pool on a cruise ship, you know.
Oh, my God, that's so funny.
I mean, I was crazy. The fact that I do not have a broken neck or a broken back is a miracle.
Yes.
So I've definitely become much less of a risk taker as I've gotten older. But when I was younger, I was totally counterphobic. Whatever I was afraid of, I would do 10 times more intensely than somebody else.
That's amazing.
How about you, Steve? What do you think is your current biggest risk you take?
Current? Boy, that's, I've really cleaned up my act. I think my problem area, this is great. I'm talking to a therapist and a psychologist. Laying down here and looking inward, I need a little work done in the tool use area. I'm still a little careless. I'll use tools inappropriately. You know, I'll use a knife to, you know, perform some, you know, thing on my body, or I'll use the, you know, a tool to, not in the right way, in the recommended way, even for the purpose for which it's intended. I'll fall off a ladder or a chair. I'll use a chair to stand on to reach something. I need work on tools. That's it.
All right. Well, let's all make a vow, the three of us, mindfully from here to the next week. We are all going to be mindful of the area where you need our biggest growth in. How's that?
Make I love
a commitment
it.
On air?
Yes. I'm in.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm in.
Well, it's unbelievable, but we are out of time. We have been speaking with Steve Kasner, the author of Careful, A User's Guide to Our Injury-Prone Minds. Steve, where can people find you and how do they get the book?
Well, you can buy the book anywhere, literally. And please swing by and visit my website, stevekasner.com, just all one word. I'm on Twitter. Love to follow people who post interesting things there, too. Steve Kasner, that's my handle. I got all the simple names that match my name.
And that
so
is
please, the book.
S is in Sam, N-E-R, Kasner, but it's pronounced Kasner.
Right.
Right. Okay,
yep.
Awesome. You've been
Type in Kasner Careful, and I'm coming up all over the place.
Perfect.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
It was so interesting. Really
Such
appreciate
great
it.
Wisdom.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks so much.
I feel better.
Oh, good.
You've done your job.
Exactly. Well, we'll bill you.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay,
please, absolutely.
Bye bye.
All right. Thank you.
So cool.
That
Very
is so
interesting.
Cool. Okay. So next week we have The Knowledge of Illusion with Stephen Sloman.
Yeah, very interesting.
Exciting. All right.
Very
and
cool.
And thanks, listeners, if you did try to listen to us right at the
I
top
know.
Of the hour
Sorry
today.
About the...
Sorry about that. We had a little glitch here. Power.
Exactly.
All right. Love y'all. Have
Take
a great
care.
Week.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.